So it's time now to dig into the pockets. Okay? We have people going to pass buckets around, and you to help out. Those of you who can afford to, please do. We need the support. We would like to get a paper out next week, commemorating coming out. We certainly want to continue with our literacy campaign. So at this point, we're going to call up Nadine. She's from the Apps Resource and Organizing Center. She's going to come up and speak to us about what's going on in with the struggle with the Palestinians. And the party has always lent support and solidarity with the struggle of the Palestinian people. So here is Nadine. She's going to give us some update.
Good evening. First, I wanted to thank Brother Melvin, Brother Emery, and Chairman Seals, primarily because of the opportunity to come here and learn. Because as Palestinian refugees, in 1948, there were 750,000 plus refugees created when the State of Israel was created. That number is now 6 million refugees. And when you don't have your home, my grandma still has the key to our home, what used to be our home. You don't have food or clothes on your back, the one thing that you can bring down to the new generation of Palestinians is education. So I want to thank them for the opportunity to be here to learn. This has probably been read in the past. I've only been in San Francisco for a couple years, so first I want to let you know I'm quite ignorant to the connection between the Black Panther Party and the Palestinian Liberation Movement. It wasn't until I came up here in San Francisco 2 years ago that I really started to learn the connections. I remember a brother at a Critical Resistance on a panel on political prisoners. He told me that when Layla Khaled was a Palestinian woman, a freedom fighter in the 60s and 70s, he said when Layla Khaled, she hijacked an Israeli plane. When she hijacked that plane, he said the Black Panthers were lifting up their fists in the air when she hijacked that plane. And I didn't know that that connection existed. And then this has probably been read before, but in 1970, Dr. Huey Newton gave his On the Middle East communique, and this is what it says. We have respect for all people, and we have respect for the right of any people to exist. We support the Palestinians' just struggle for liberation 100%. We will go on doing this, and we would like for all of the progressive people of the world to join our ranks in order to make a world in which all people can live. So this reminded me of something very, very important. On December 11, 1948, the UN passed the Resolution 194 called the Right of Return, the right of Palestinians to determine themselves. Now, self-determination is a very big term, but to me it means two important points. One, for the Palestinians to have the right to live as human beings, because the way they're treated right now in Palestine, they're not treated as human beings. And two, the right to determine oneself is the right to determine one's future. So to recognize the right of return is to give Palestinian refugees the choice. Give us the option to return. 6 million Palestinians are not going to return to Palestine, but give us the option, the right to determine our futures, to choose to return. And Dr. Huey Newton talked a lot about the right of people to self-determination. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about the situation in Gaza and then go into some recent stuff going on in the Israeli elections just to make a connection. The invasion, as most of you, I'm sure all of you know, began on December 27, 2008. But this invasion, we knew about it way before December 27, 2008, on a Saturday. The Palestinian people have been oppressed for 60 years in direct occupation under the Israeli government for 40 years. In particularly in the Gaza Strip. Now just to give you an idea of what the Gaza Strip looks like. The Gaza Strip is about 1.5 million people live in the Gaza Strip. Now I was looking this up online, in Alameda County, about 1.4 million live in Alameda County. But Alameda County is much larger than the Gaza Strip. The Palestinian people, the density, is about 11,136 Palestinians per square mile. 11,136 Palestinians per square mile. That is the most densely populated region in the world. You're talking about China population in India. In the Gaza Strip, the most densely populated region in the world. The density in Alameda County is about 2,000 persons per square mile versus 11,000. So when you want to invade the Gaza Strip, there is no way you're not going to hurt innocent civilians. And when you hear in the media talk about this is a war on Hamas, this is not a war on Hamas. This is a war on the resistance movement. And Hamas is a part of the resistance movement. In 2006, the Palestinian people had what was called by the international community the most freest and fairest elections. The most freest and fairest elections they've ever observed. And the people chose who to represent themselves. And they chose what became the party that started in 1987, Hamas. Hamas was popular for several reasons. One of them was the community work that they did, the social services that they did for the people in Gaza and in the West Bank. Now when Hamas won, what the US and Israel did was call them a terrorist organization, and we're going to choose for you who's going to lead you. And they chose Mahmoud Abbas, whose credibility level is nil, is nothing, to the Palestinian people today. When that happened, of course the Palestinian people got extremely upset and resisted that. And for 18 months since then, especially in the Gaza Strip, where Hamas had the majority of the control, they had an economic blockade, an economic siege. And what that means, and most of you already know this, probably, is literally the Palestinians were living in an open-air prison. When the Israelis disengaged from Gaza, meaning that they redeployed their troops, they didn't leave Gaza, they redeployed to the borders and controlled the borders of Gaza, which is with Egypt and Rafah, Israel, and the sea. The Mediterranean Sea. They controlled all entry and exit points, which means no freedom of movement. And goods coming in and out on trucks were not allowed, very minimally. And especially during this 18-month siege. Now here in Oakland and San Francisco, thousands of trucks come in every day. In Gaza, according to the agreement, 700, which is nothing for 1.5 million people, 700 trucks were supposed to be allowed in. The reality was only 200 trucks of food, water, gas, and humanitarian aid was allowed into Gaza. They knew a war was coming, but the resistance was ready. So on December 27th, they invaded first by air and then later on the ground. I called my auntie who's in Gaza. And I said, Khalto, means auntie, Khalto, what's going on? They tell me that they're asking people to leave. They give you courtesy phone calls. And they drop leaflets. Think about the psychological effect. Leaflets dropping in the air, the constant buzzing of the Apache helicopters and F-16s. That's what she kept telling me. I hear the buzzing every single day. It was a 22-day offensive. I told her, where can you go? She said, where do you think I can go? And this is after when a lot of people fled to the UN, the UNRWA schools, to seek shelter, they blew up the United Nations school. 29 educational facilities were destroyed. 29. She's like, where do you think I'm gonna go? If I leave the house, they're just gonna blow up anywhere else I go. I can't even go to the hospitals. The hospitals are completely full, overloaded. Bodies were laying on the floor. When doctors went to Gaza, after they finally let doctors in, only a few, by the way, and it wasn't until today, this morning, that they opened the borders to Rafah for only 3 days. And the majority of the Palestinians who want to get humanitarian aid, some under critical condition, they're not allowed to go into Egypt. So even though the borders are open, not much is going to happen with that. So she told me there's nowhere to run. During the 22-day invasion, 90% of the population had no direct access to water. No direct access to water. And they started using biological and chemical weapons, which today Israel admitted, yes, we used white phosphorus, we used cluster bombs. And just to tell you a story of what white phosphorus does, The minute you smell the white phosphorus, it's instant kidney failure. Instant kidney failure. So I was talking to my friend's mom in Gaza, and I'm on the phone with her, and I'm telling her, describing to me the white phosphorus. You can see the pictures if you go online. And she said, we had to keep all the windows and doors closed because they're suffocating inside. You need to breathe, but they had to keep it closed so they wouldn't smell the white phosphorus. She said, imagine looking outside the window. And she was telling me a specific story. She's looking outside the window, and she says, it looks like it's snowing. It doesn't snow in Gaza. It looks like it's snowing, and she sees a young boy. There are several people running in the streets. And she sees a young boy, and the minute the white phosphorus hits his skin on his arm, his flesh begins to melt. That's what white phosphorus does. Instant kidney failure, when you scent it, and it completely destroys the flesh off your skin. You'll see pictures where literally bodies are cut in half, melted from the white phosphorus. And that was one of the weapons that we use in mass all over Palestine, all over the Gaza Strip. So that's just a couple of the things that happened. More than 1,300 people died, and a third of those were children, more than 400. The situation was so bad that when they finally allowed some doctors to come, and doctors who've been in war scenes in Iraq and war scenes in Vietnam, walked in and they said they've never seen anything like this. Situation was so bad that you saw dogs eating the bodies of children in the streets. And this is not new to people, the Palestinians. This is not something new. In 2002, when there was an invasion in the West Bank, similar situation when I went to visit Jenin refugee camp. One of the people in the Red Cross was telling me the stories. He said, I knew it got bad. I knew it got bad when he saw a chicken eating out the eye of a child in the street. That's how bad he knew it got. This is in 2002. And now in 2008, it's much worse. The situation in Gaza is so bad that my auntie tells me it's worse than in 48. It's worse than 56, worse than the 70s. This is the worst they've ever seen it. So it's pretty, pretty bad. But the resistance is not dead. This just inflared the resistance movement. They're still there, and they're still alive. But the international community really needs to understand how bad that situation is there. And so that's just a little bit of what's going on there. At the same time, when you cut off, when you control all the entry and exit points, you get no water, no gas, and no electricity. What happens when you have no electricity is, electricity is what funnels the water sanitation systems to keep your water clean. They cut off the electricity often, and especially during the 22-day invasion, it was cut off most of the time. Once electricity gets cut off, what happened was, even before the invasion, the water sewage system and the water sanitation system, the sewage system and the water sanitation systems collided together. Now 70% of the population in Gaza have no clean water. 70% of 1.5 million people have no clean water. That's the situation in Gaza today. And we knew the invasion was going to end before Barack Obama became president. Because Barack Obama refused at first to make a statement on Gaza. He finally made it towards the end. But he made a statement in Mumbai. He made a statement immediately when something happened in Mumbai, he made a statement. This is before he became inaugurated. And in Gaza, he didn't make a statement until much towards the end, when he knew the invasion was going to end. Right now, Israelis are having an election. The people, the parties that are in the majority, there's four major parties. There's Kadima, which is the current prime minister, Tzipi Livni. And Emery was up here earlier, and he was talking about those are Zionist gangs. Tzipi Livni's father was in one of those Zionist gangs. Tzipi Livni and Benjamin Netanyahu, which is part of the Likud party. And then two other smaller parties, one of which is Labor, and one of which is a party that's called Betinu Israel, Our Home Israel. And the guy in charge of that is Avigdor Lieberman. Lieberman asks, and this is how racist, and they even put it out in the news, and you can read on CNN, they call Lieberman a fascist, because what he asks for the Palestinians who live in Israel, they're called Arab Israelis, there's about 1.5 million of the 7 million population within the Israeli borders. He asked them, they need to come out and make a statement of loyalty. They need to come out and say, I recognize the Jewish character of the state of Israel. And so when you saw that term Zionism up there, and Emery spoke about it a little bit, Zionism is both a political and a religious ideology. And what it is an ideology that says there has to be a land that only the Jewish people have the right for, no one else. And there is a law in Israel. If you don't know it, look it up. There's a law that says a Jewish person anywhere in the world can live in Israel, but the people who live there, the indigenous people of the land that live there, have no right to their own property. So Zionism, the international community, came out and said Zionism is racism. Why is it racism? Because it's an exclusionary policy that only allows one group of people to the exclusion of others. And Avigdor Lieberman is asking the Palestinians to recognize this racism. He's also asking them that they all have to serve in the Israeli army. They currently are not forced to serve, and as a result, they don't get benefits. Some Arabs do volunteer to serve, but they don't serve and they don't get benefits. He's asking them to serve, and it reminded me in the 10-point program, the Black Panther Party, point number 6. And point number 6 says, black people should not be forced to fight in a military to defend a racist government that does not protect us. Palestinians should not be forced to do the same thing. Should not be forced to recognize racism, and should not be forced to fight for racism. So that's the elections that's going on today. And I know this is all very negative news, but there's a lot of positive things that are going on. And one of them, and we spoke about, we saw them in the pictures, is the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. And that's going on today, and there's a call, an international call for boycott, divestment, and sanctions on March 6th and March 30th. There's already been successes with the BDS campaign. In Hampshire College in Amherst, Massachusetts, the Students for Justice in Palestine actually, and this is a great success, actually got the university to divest from 6 major companies that sent millions of dollars to Israel. So that is something to be happy about. That's definitely a success. At the same time, the Dutch Labour Party in Stockholm in Sweden and the South African dock workers refused to bring in shipments that are coming in from Israel. That is something that happened recently in South Africa. So there are successes going on in the world. When the situation occurred in Gaza, I saw people here in the streets that I've never seen ever before, specifically young folks. We came out in the thousands and the hundreds. Hundreds and thousands, and overseas, they came out in the millions. One of the largest demonstrations was in Morocco and in London. Almost 1 million in London and 1 million in Morocco. Hundreds and thousands in Latin America, and thousands came out here. So there is hope. People are starting to make those connections, not just because on January 1st, $3.6 billion went to fund exclusively military funding to Israel, but people started to make a connection with something else. On January 1st, 22-year-old Oscar Grant was shot at the Fruitvale Park. Also on January 1st, Anthony Giddens, I believe, I hope I got the name right, and Robbie Tolan were 2 other victims also on January 1st who were shot by police. One who's alive, Robbie Tolan, Anthony who's not alive, 14 shots, 12 of them into the body. All 3 of them black men under the age of 25. And people came out here in Oakland, those in support of Palestine and those in support against racism. And they came out here in Oakland. And it was amazing to see the hundreds of people who came out because the connections are being made. Recently in San Francisco State, what bothered me is some student groups who've been there for a while, when I recently started to try to organize with them, they were telling me so-and-so didn't come knock on my door and say we're having this event. Whether it's a political education event, whether it's a protest, so-and-so didn't come knock on my door. And I laughed, because if I knew about an event or about a protest or whatever it is, a workshop, a dialogue, sitting together at a cafe, I would be there. Justice is not gonna come and knock on your door. You gotta go out to justice. And those connections are starting to be made. And I'm really, really happy that I was able to be here to learn about Dr. Huey Newton and the Black Panther Party, and to make these connections, because if we don't make these connections between the various movements and these communities of struggle, the movement for justice is not going to go anywhere. Thank you.